This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Nally. Our guest this week is Krista Harden, President and CEO of the U.S. Dairy Export Council. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. AgriPulse Open Mic continues with dairy leader Krista Harden next. Today's Open Mic segment is brought to you by America's crop insurance industry, which is thankful for the continued support of farmers, commodity organizations, rural businesses, lenders, and lawmakers who are fighting to maintain a strong farm safety net, providing individualized protection on more than 490 million acres of farmland. Crop insurance remains the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. The U.S. dairy industry is extremely disappointed with a recent ruling over dairy trade with Canada. Krista Harden, President and CEO of the U.S. Dairy Export Council, says the Canadian government is not living up to its commitments under the USMCA trade agreement.
We feel very, very strongly that the Canadians, although they're our friends in so many ways, but they're just not living up to their commitments in this trade agreement, and it has really, it not only harms our farmers and our processors here in the U.S., but it really has impact on their own consumers, frankly. So they continue not to, you know, allow our products in at the rate in the ways that it should be, that they agreed to, and it, you know, it's just, it's very unfortunate that we spend months, years negotiating agreements that are supposed to benefit and, you know, all parties, right, not just one. And then for them to be able to walk away that, they have made very minimal changes that they agreed to make in their system to allow our products in. And then, you know, they're also, we're seeing an increasingly number of Canadian dairy proteins kind of evading our part of our export agreement, coming back into the U.S. and final products. So, this was just disappointing. We call it ill-conceived.
What was the issue that brought this particular resolution?
It is complicated. I will say that. It is the way that Canada restricts who can receive our products, who can get to U.S. dairy, and how they're used in Canada. And they have TRQs, which are, you know, a mechanism for keeping products in a system that's supposed to have these quotas, cattle producing quotas, so allows us, you know, to be able to have product coming in to you know, a different country, and in this case, Canada. And they continue to just ignore it. I mean, they just don't pay attention to, you know, what they agreed to do, and it's as if they never agreed to. So they continue to do what they've always done instead of actually paying attention to the agreement and making increases and allowing our products to come in.
Is it safe to say that our door is open wider than theirs?
Oh, yes. Most definitely. Definitely. And, well, you know, product, you know, raw product that does go to Canada does come back here in, you know, consumer products, yogurts and ice creams or, you know, whatever it might be. We have a lot of trade across the border with Canada. They like our products, and they like to manufacture products and send them here. You know, that's what trade is about. It's two-way, right? But they have just ignored these commitments to, and look for basically for loopholes. That's the only, I hate to say that, but it is, looking for ways not to meet their agreement, what they, you know, a few years ago said they would do, they have not done.
Is there any other legal recourse? I mean, could the U.S. retaliate against the Canadians?
Well, we're looking at that, and I will say we really do appreciate the administration's help. USTR has been, you know, our full partner in these efforts, and we have looked for every opportunity that we can. We are not going to let this go. That's one message, I think, to the Canadians, looking for loopholes, looking for ways to avoid the agreement. Is we just cannot let that stand. You know, trade law experts are definitely, you know, looking at this, lawyers with the government and on the outside, looking for ways to see if, you know, what are our next steps? What can we do to keep the Canadians, you know, committed to their earlier commitments, frankly?
Krista, this past week at the American Seed Trade Association and meeting, an individual, the U.S. Grains Council, said we can't allow Mexico to be successful in their effort to restrict imports of genetically modified corn. In retrospect, can we allow, or what does it say about trade agreements and about dairy if Canada is able to say that they'll do one thing and then renege on that agreement?
Well, I think that that is the question. And it is one where, again, that's why the precedent is so important, to hold feet to the fire, not to let this go, to look for absolutely every alternative we can to press upon the Canadians legally, politically, through all channels that we can, to make sure that they are not allowed just to ignore the parts they don't like in a trade agreement. Now, I think our industry is united in this. We just cannot let the Canadians get by with this. The same thing you might have heard from other industries, the same with us. We just cannot let this go.
So keeping the topic on trade and now to the WTO, what about the EU's geographic indicators? How's that still impacting the domestic industry and at the same time our ability to sell globally? Is that still an issue?
It is a big issue, and it's one GIs, geographic indicators, common food names. It's certainly a big issue, not only for dairy, but wine, some of the meat products, others as well. Yes, it's very harmful. We think it's unfair. Trade practices, what the EU tries to impose, not their way only in their agreements around the world, even in countries where we have trade agreements. They're trying to come in to, you know, on top of our already existing trade agreements in different countries to say we cannot use certain names of cheeses that they feel are geographic indicators. We say they're common food names. We've been using them for a very long time. And, the consumer knows what they expect from these names, high quality, high value, whether they come from the EU or the U.S. So the EU is very aggressive. They are doing this, taking these steps around the world. In a lot of their trade agreements, it really has been a problem in a number of places, and it really has stopped the progression of agreements, frankly. But say EU and Australia comes to mind, where we kept talking to the Australians from the U.S. government, from industry to industry about don't have this, you know, restrictive language on geographic indicators included in a trade agreement with the EU. It is, you know, it is definitely a very aggressive trade tactic being taken by the EU. To limit, you know, Parmigiano, feta, certain names of cheeses that are widely used across the world, not just from certain areas. And, you know, we push back, and we remind the Europeans that we're a country of immigrants, that much of our cheese-making skills and history comes from Europe, from the old world. And we make very, very good products here. Very, you know, certain styles of cheeses that, you know, for ancestors learned from their European ancestors. And for decades and decades, these products have been in the marketplace. And now to say, oh, you can't use that name is where the problem is.
You recently were in Mexico. What was the purpose of the trip, and how important is the Mexican consumer to the U.S. dairy farmer?
Mexico is our number one market, and we have a very, very strong working relationship with the Mexican consumer groups, with processors, even with their farmers. We work very closely. We were down there. We took farmers. We took leaders from the Dairy Management, Inc., our parent company, the checkoff for those who know DMI. We went down just, you know, to meet with their government. We met with our government as well. Our folks down there, but also with processors, with consumer groups. We were in retail markets, It's really to keep the communication open between our two countries. We have 80% of the market share of their imports on dairy and dairy products. We do not want to take them for granted. We want them to know we don't take them for granted. We appreciate their relationship with us, the growing demand for dairy in Mexico, incorporating to a number of cultural favorite foods as well as cheese and things that we share. And just continue to keep in, the dialogue open, talking about common issues. Our farmers love to talk to each other.
Could you share some of the highlights about the balance sheet for dairy exports in both volume and in value?
Last year was such a really good year for us. I wish I could just talk about last year. It was record-breaking. We reached over $9.6 billion of exports, which was just so exciting and meant a great deal to the stability and the economic viability of the U.S. dairy industry. This year's tougher. It's definitely tougher. We export to 150 countries. Many of them are still suffering after the pandemic. They're still coming out of a tough economic times with high inflation. We're seeing, you know, really demand very soft in a number of key places for us. We talked about Mexico a few minutes ago. It's still a very strong market, and it has been dealing with the changes in economic issues quite well, and we're very, very grateful for that because Mexico is such an important market. But we've definitely seen trouble, much softer markets in places like Southeast Asia. Obviously, China, it's hard to talk about U.S. exports without talking about China. It has certainly been weaker. And inconsistent in its in markets demand. So that has really put us down quite a bit. I think we're through September. That's the latest numbers that I have. Right now we're down about 7%. So it is weaker demand, increased competition from other global suppliers, the EU and Oceania, New Zealand in particular, very strong competition. And, you know, frankly, when China is soft, not just on the U.S., not just buying from the U.S., but not buying dairy in general, because their biggest supplier is New Zealand. So if New Zealand is not sourcing in China, they're competing with us in a bigger way and more in other critical markets around the world. So we're definitely seeing that kind of impact as well. We'll see how we come out this year. It will definitely be lower than last year. Long term, we're used to the cycles of trade, and long term, the future's still really bright for U.S. dairy. We know that we have the capacity, the resources, and that includes natural resources, the land, water. Sometimes not quite enough or too much, depending on what part of the world, but resources in general to continue to grow, to be more productive. We invest in genetics. We invest in productivity and efficiencies. We will become more and more of a supplier to the world's demand. But this year's a tough year. There's no way to sugarcoat it. It's just a tough year for global demand.
So there is much emphasis on the U.S. economy and the global economy. What do the dollars and cents, inflation, and interest rates have to do with the export landscape?
Well, obviously, inflation makes it very difficult. You know, farmers are paying very high prices for feed, for energy, for labor. You know, uncertainty there around the world. Inflation is even higher in many of our, you know, traditional markets. I mentioned Southeast Asia. That's one comes to mind. And, other parts of the world as well. They're still recovering. So they don't have the dollars to spend. And they're not buying high-value luxury in some cases. Dairy products, but even they may be taking instead of going out and eating, they're eating at home. Their currencies are in flux, meaning they don't have the buying power they might have had in the past. So folks are concerned, you know, economically, and are very cautious spenders, I would say. So it does put, you know, where we might have had a flourishing market last year and the year before, a little more retraction, a little more caution, a little more conservative spending, if you will, in the daily diet.
What was U.S. Dairy's message at the COP28 meeting? And adding to that question, does the U.S. sustainability story give you a leg up over some of your competitors?
Well, you know, our folks are still there right now. We have a farmer there, Alex Peterson, who's a chair of the U.S. Dairy Export Council. He's a farmer from Missouri. We're delighted that he could be there. We always have. We take farmers to these global meetings because we believe they are the best messengers, and their passion, their commitment to sustainability is unmatched around the world. And we love having the ability to talk about the commitment from U.S. dairy farmers and processors to being sustainable, GHG neutral by 2050. You know, to use less water, to maximize recycling, to be more productive and more efficient while using less resources. So I know that that is a leg up for us. The diversity of U.S. dairy is another strength we can talk about, which is so positive for us. It's tough audiences there. We walk in with, you know, to a biased audience in many, many cases, where folks have defined U.S. dairy in their minds. They're not, you know, as open-minded sometimes. You have to kind of be there to show them firsthand about our commitments, help them understand how important being sustainable, being good for the environment as well as people is important for us. Nutrition and sustainability, they go hand in hand. And frankly, we got a little help this week with the FAO, the Food and Agriculture Organization of the UN, based in Rome. A lot of folks have heard of FAO. A report just was released showing that livestock emissions are actually lower than previously estimated. Their impact on the environment is actually not as great as often is pointed to. That was really a welcomed report from the FAO, a very credible source for many to look at what they're saying. So I believe they're saying livestock is responsible for 12% of global greenhouse emissions, and that's down from their previous estimate of 14.5. And that does include dairy. There is some breakout in there looking at dairy and looking by region. We're still less than 2% in North America for global greenhouse emissions. So having that kind of information coupled with our strong commitment from U.S. dairy industry, perfect timing for COP, perfect timing.
What's your evaluation now of the market and promotion funds in the 18 Farm Bill, and is it adequate? What would you like to see in the 24 language?
Well, we have a couple of priorities in the Farm Bill, and I'm hopeful that, you know, the FMD and the MAP program, Farm Development and Market Access programs, I hope that they, you know, that something would be continued but also increased. They have not been increased in a very long time, so expanding, you know, funding for export promotion programs we would very much support. There is, you know, the new program that has just been out, and I think the bipartisan effort in the Senate and the working with Secretary Vilsack and USDA to come up with the RAP program, this new regional agricultural promotion program, I think is the right terms, using the CCC, the Commodity Credit Corporation, be able to fund some of these promotional programs to help us have the tools and more markets with more products. With some focuses on food security and other in regions like the African continent, looking at ways to help commodities like dairy do more in these critical markets, and certainly food security as well. Very happy with the RAP program. We also have another priority that we hope will be included in the Farm Bill, and it's a long name, but it's the Safeguarding American Value-Added Exports Bill, which is we call SAVE, which is back to that issue we talked about a few minutes ago on common food names and making sure there are some protections. And we're giving USTR some ability to negotiate protections for some of those key terms with trading partners to help us preserve our exports. So we could go head-to-head in a more critical way, USTR could in particular, with the Europeans, as they're doing the same, we would have more tools for USDR to use. So I'm hopeful the SAVE Act will be included in the Farm Bill.
So let's take it down to the consumer level. We talk a lot in the U.S. about the changing attitude of consumers. So let's move it up to the stratosphere and look down on the globe. Mm-hmm. For some consumers who are hungry and food insecure, they just want more food. But for others that are certainly better financed, have more disposable income for food, they're quite interested in the type of food that they purchase. Is a health-conscious consumer today only in the U.S., or are they on a global scale, and can dairy gain an advantage there with enough promotion and education?
Well, you're exactly right about the focus on health and wellness. One thing I think the pandemic made many people, global citizens around the world, think about health, think about wellness, what they need to be doing, what they can do, and food is certainly a part of that. Not the only part, but food became much more of a focus on how to eat healthier, how do I do more things as an individual to make sure that I'm doing everything I can to stay healthy and be ready for some of these critical diseases and challenges. So I think it is a benefit for dairy. Dairy is widely recognized as a very vital part of a balanced diet. And we're also just seeing more interest in, you know, sports drinks, nutritional bars, adding dairy protein to, you know, traditional favorite foods even around the world to make them healthier, and baked goods even in other places, substituting permeate for salt in some cultures. So there's this growing interest in how to use the components of dairy into various food groups, food, favorite foods, and new foods as well. So I see that growing and growing around the world. We have the Center for Dairy Excellence in Singapore, and we have a test kitchen there, and chefs who come in and work with consumer goods companies and different customers to say they'll bring in their favorite recipes for products that are on the shelf, or they're selling in bakeries or in different stores, and say, how can I make this more nutritious? How can I add dairy, substitute dairy to make this a better product? That is something that's happening everywhere. So I do see a long-term trajectory for that being continue to have dairy in diets all over the world, maybe in ways that we didn't even think about right now. We think about cheese, and we think about ice cream, and we think about some of our dairy proteins, but I think there's even more to come.
Krista Hardin, your whole career has been dedicated to agriculture, from growing up on a farm, working with soybean farmers at the Department of Agriculture, so much more, and now working with the dairy farmers on the global horizon. We thank you for your service to the industry, and I thank you for taking time to be with us on this edition of Open Mic. Krista, it is Open Mic, and today you get the last word.
Well, I appreciate that so much, and I appreciate being asked. I have been very fortunate to be involved in this industry. I always say that, you know, how I introduced myself, and really my personal passion is being the daughter of peanut farmers from Georgia. That is my motivator. I love working for farmers, with farmers, making sure that they have a voice at the table, and that they're heard and better understood, not only in the U.S., but around the world. It's a pleasure to work in dairy. It's a difficult, tough industry. It seems they have so many things going against them, yet they get up, you know, before dawn every day and are in their barns with their cows. I'm just so honored to be able to work for them, and also our processors who make these great products that are enjoyed and needed, frankly, around the world. So it's a time of the year when I think we're all thinking about being grateful, and I'll leave on a note of that I'm extremely grateful for the career I've had and the support I've had and the ability to play a tiny part in helping U.S. Agriculture.
Our thanks to Krista Hardin, President and CEO of the U.S. Dairy Export Council, our guest this week on Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Nally.